Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, August 31st, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or listening through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that page and click on the link in the upper left-hand corner that says Start Here, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and a tool I've been using to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that we've all been given. You can also download the actual worksheet itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click on it, download it, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process. And those audio files can serve as a tutorial. So if you don't have the time to call us on the internet show and ask to be stepped through a worksheet yourself, or if you don't want to put your issues out there openly, you can listen to other people who have, and the recordings are available absolutely free in the archives. And a number of special shows highlighting that have been curated out by Jeannie Rice on that page, if you click on the link to the MP3 files, and they can basically become your tutorial for how to use these tools to good effect in your life. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do that soon and often, because that frequently leads them to have questions or comments or testimonials. And if you have that, you can call us at 563-999-3581 and press 1. And it'll put a little question mark by your phone number so I can announce you by your area code. Or alternately, you could send me an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org, whyagain.org. We're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year. Today is the 243rd day of the year, and the workbook lesson today reads, Today I will judge nothing that occurs. The commentary reads, I will be honest with myself today. I will not think that I already know what must remain beyond my present grasp. I will not think that I understand the whole from its bits, the bits of perception that I can see. Today I recognize that this is so, and I am so relieved of the judgments that I cannot make. Thus do I free myself and free what I look upon to be in peace as the Creator created us. So Creator, today I leave creation free to be itself. What a concept, right? 13.84 billion years of life progressing from what our scientists tell us was the Big Bang, resulting in the events that you see today. And your conscious logical mind has been trained to look at that and think it knows better than the flow of life and creation. So today, I'm going to leave creation free to be itself. I'm going to honor all of its parts, and I'm one of those. We are all one because each part contains the memory of creation, the creative force of life, the intelligence of creation, and truth must shine in all of us as one. So that's the workbook lesson, and Pam Grout's Course in Miracles experiment lesson titled 243 is named Houston, There Is No Problem. Quotes Marcus Aurelius as saying, a blazing fire makes flame and brightness out of everything that is thrown into it. Amor fati. This is what Pam writes. This two-word Latin phrase helps me cope with last year's massive rip in my understanding of the universe. Pam writes, losing your only child is brutal terrain. I'm often tormented with overwhelming emotions. Some days I stay in bed long after the sun rises. Occasionally, I question whether life is still worth living. Tough to admit, as the writer who regularly blogged about being the luckiest person on the planet. So, if I'm going to love my fate no matter what, as amor fati means, I have no choice but to rely on the Course, and it promises that, A, this body, this material world, is a mental construct, and B, the only problem I could ever have is one of perception, and C, I have the power to control my thoughts. So I draw strength from Viktor Frankl, who found meaning even though the rest of his family perished during the Holocaust. I remind myself that I got to spend 25 years with this incredible being of light and love. I was a 37-year-old singleton with no real prospects in sight when she chose to hang out with me. Literally, she was a life-changing gift, the most amazing, the most compassionate, the wisest person I ever met. And I turn all of that over to the Holy Spirit, who reminds me, if it's not wholly joyous, it is not God's will. If it's not wholly joyous, it involves some decision I erroneously made. Because it was me who made the less than joyous decision, see number one, and because this decision was never forced on me, see number two, I can change it at any time. Number four, I just have to go back to the point where I made the erroneous decision and ask the Holy Spirit to decide instead. I repeat, I don't have to fix anything. Number five, over and over, the Course assures me that Taz now belongs to the Infinite. Taz is her daughter's name. And that someday soon, I will too. You'll spend eternity with Taz, the Course says. In fact, you're in eternity with her now once you change your perception. So, the Holy Spirit reminds me that number one, if it's not wholly joyous, it's not God's will. Number two, if it's not wholly joyous, it involves some decision that I erroneously made. And number three, because it was me who made the less than joyous decision, see number one, and because this decision was never forced on me, see number two, I can change it at any time. Number four, I just have to go back to the point in time where I made the erroneous decision and ask the Holy Spirit to decide instead. I repeat, I don't have to fix anything. And number five, over and over again, the Course assures me that my daughter now belongs to the Infinite and that someday I will too. So what's being referred to there is one of the lines that I quote from the Course quite often because it was so powerful for me. I need only return to my original error in thought in order for all the negative effects of that error in thought to be wiped away, to be corrected. There's nothing for me to do except see the errors in thought that I use to create my pain and suffering. So that's our Course in Miracles workbook lesson and the commentary from Pam Grout. And today is a Tuesday, so we will have a support group tonight available from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. All the information about how to join us there, absolutely free if you so desire, is at mindshiftersacademy.org website. And I'm not quite sure who, but I believe it was Ellen who called in the show and suggested Richard Moss as an author and somebody for me to contact. And he wrote books like The Mandala of Being and Inside Out Healing. And so it's been a while back and forth reaching out to different resources, but he finally did respond today and has agreed to be interviewed. So we're going to have a conversation on the 15th to pin down when we might do the actual interview. But the word I got is that he's teaching in Europe right now and that he will get back to me when he's back in town. And then the next word I got was from him over in Europe saying, yep, I'm ready. I'm willing to do this, but I'm not back in town until the 13th. So thank you for that, and that leads me to the reminder that we're always willing to entertain your suggestions for book titles or authors or podcasts that you find valuable and are in alignment with this work, or you find them extremely valuable and they're not in alignment with this work. We will do our best to reach out to those people, read those books, and see if we can't schedule an interview. Ellen, welcome.
Hi, Dr. Tim. The first thing I just want to mention is that I'm hearing a lot of static on the call. I don't know if you're hearing that or if anyone else is hearing it, but I thought I would call in and say that because I am definitely hearing a lot of static.
Okay. Well, I'm not hearing it, but Susan's on the call. Let's see if she's hearing it. Because if it's me, then I should hang up and call in again.
Right.
Susan,
yeah.
Are you hearing a lot of static?
Not,
are you
none
able
at all.
To respond?
Okay.
Yep.
So
can
then,
you hear
let's
me?
See. Yes.
So Susan, if you're not hearing it, it must be Ellen's line.
Right. Okay.
So that's
maybe.
The first
yeah.
Thing.
No. It's okay. Good. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to hang up and I'm going to call back in. And just the way,
all right.
It really bothers him. Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
So we have, I was just saying that we extend the invitation for you to let us know about work that you know of that's powerful for you or authors that you read that you feel are life-changing or entertaining. And we will do what we can to, in this case, that's the royal we. I don't have a team doing this, but I will reach out to people. I will see if they're willing to be interviewed. I will do what I can to at least read one of their books if they have, you know, one of these authors that's quite prolific. And that in that way you can help us expand our work and our understanding of the work on the Mind Shifters radio show and on the On Your Mind podcast. Yesterday we had the On Your Mind podcast replay that I played here on Mind Shifters of Robert Whittaker. And I wanted to do that because I had the hope of expanding the exposure to that interview. It is available on the On Your Mind podcast through the journeysdream.org website. And now it's also available in the archives of the Mind Shifters radio show. So, Ellen, you're back on?
Yes, I am.
Comments, reactions?
Well, I'm excited that you're going to get to interview Richard Moss. I definitely want to know where I'll be able to listen to that once you do it. I'm actually reading a second book of his right now, and it's no longer in print. I had to buy a used copy, which is no issue. It's so completely different from the first book I read by him, and I thought that the Inside Out Healing, which was written, I think, quite a few years later than the one I'm reading now, which is called The Second Miracle. I always think, oh, I should read the latest work of someone. But honestly, this I'm really getting a lot out of now this second book called The Second Miracle. I really love his – he describes all the different techniques that he uses in, like, group sessions to kind of, like, open people up. And he does a lot of, like, activities that lead people into spontaneous expression. And he talks a lot about that in this book I'm reading now. And I just have found him to be a really wonderful teacher for me. And so I'm glad that you were able to get in touch with him. And did you happen to read any of his work?
I have one or two of them that I have just cracked, and now that he's going to agree to this, I will be trying to get through. I think the one that you were referring to is I lost my webpage for that. Books is the Transforming Your Life Through the Power of Presence.
Yes.
Right?
The Inside Out Healing.
And then,
mm-hmm.
And then the other one that I think that was written within a year or so of that is Discovering the Power of Presence, The Mandala of Being, subtitled
okay.
Discovering the Power of Awareness. So I'm going to try to, you know, dig into both of those. Probably won't finish both of them before I get to hook up with him on the 15th. But so... not yet, but I'm working on it.
Okay. Well, I like the way the one I'm reading now, which, like I said, is called The Second Miracle, and what he says are the first miracle is actually the emergence of the ego, and the second miracle is the emergence of our true self once the ego has become fully developed. And I like that he refers to the emergence of the ego as a miracle, because so many people want to, you know, don't look at it that way. But of course, it's what has to happen in order for us to experience this reality. And there's, you know, no getting rid of it. I mean, we need the ego in order to exist in this reality. Just using that as a vehicle for the expression of, you know, the true self. And it's it's so interesting because everything that I've been reading lately or listening to lately is all been kind of like the same theme. And I haven't watched this video yet, but I got a link to a video in an email yesterday. It's called God's Eternal Dilemma, and this is a video by Leonard Jacobson, whose main teaching is about being in the present moment, and then, you know, learning how to be present, and then, which he says is very, very simple, just be present with something that's present with you, and then, but then the main teaching is all around learning how the ego pulls us out of presence and you know, doing all that healing work and all that. But anyway, this particular, the intro to this video I thought was really interesting. He says that the eternal dilemma of God is that one cannot know itself. Because to know oneself involves both the knower and the known. He describes, you're saying Leonard describes how God exists eternally as eternal isness, and yet God does not know that God exists. To resolve this eternal dilemma, there would have to be a shift from oneness into duality. We are that part of God, journeying through time and separation, ultimately to return to oneness. It is in our return to oneness that God's eternal dilemma is resolved. And I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, that is a very well-known, some would call it an advanced spiritual thought process or dilemma, or, but it's the root of how, you know, when some people who come at these things from the perspective of religions, right, wrong, good, bad, guilt, shame, fault, punishment, etc., they don't get the idea that we're all going to end up in the bliss of union with all of creation. They talk about heaven and hell and those people being punished, and so it's just mind-blowing for them to think that we're all going to end up in a state where there is no separation and that everybody's going to be okay. But that's where that comes from, the idea that there is only the creation and everything that is a part of that creation, and awareness is part of either the creation or something that existed before what we think of as the creation. And so it gets mind-bending very quickly. And then it clashes with people who have been taught about reward and punishment. And it's really rough to try and, you know, help people feel safe and comfortable when they've built a framework for their lives around who's right, who's wrong, who gets rewarded, who gets punished, who's in the group, who's out of the group.
Right.
But it all comes from that questioning that you just read from, right? That all comes from the concept of, okay, if we're all part of the creation, where do we go from there?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the actuality of it goes beyond anything that our words can describe. So if anything about what Ellen just read resonates, any kind of discomfort in you, do a worksheet process on it. Do some breath work. Do an EFT tapping session. Do the Michael Rice worksheet. Do the Byron Katie questioning worksheet to dismantle your upset, because there's nothing outside of you that's ever causing your upset. These are just words. These are just thoughts. And these words and thoughts can't even begin, not even begin to explain or express the truth of our existence. So rather, unless you're a person who just really likes to fight and argue and decide who's right and who's wrong, then, you know, if you are, then go ahead, by all means, engage in that game. But unless you like that, notice if you get triggered to any kind of resistance or upset, and our invitation is to use the tools to dismantle it. Because there isn't anything here but words, and words are not the thing. And words don't tell you what's right or wrong. Right? Nothing is either right or wrong, as Shakespeare would say, but thinking makes it so. So if you label it wrong and bad, that's what it'll be for you. If you label it, you know, something to be grateful and appreciative for, that's what it will be for you.
And that's why I love today's ACIM lesson so much, because all of those are just judgments to one side or the other side.
Yeah, it's the essence of, and when I understand that I am in pain or fear or sadness, I have one of those negative emotional states in my conscious awareness, all I have to do, according to this lesson and Course in Miracles, is return to the original error in thought, and all the negative effects from that will be dissolved. They'll be wiped away. Which means I need to be willing to step out of my obsession with trying to be right. I need to cancel my need to be right and ask to be shown something else. And I need to be willing to leave creation to be free to be itself, as the lesson says.
Yeah.
So, thank you for that. Any other comments, questions, answers, or soliloquies you want to add to the show today?
Yeah, I just want to mention that everything lately for me has been pointing towards, like, the body and body consciousness, and, you know, which, and I'm sure this isn't really meant by A Course in Miracles, but, you know, there's so much, you know, especially in that last section with the lessons where, you know, the main theme was I'm not a body, I am free, which for me, it would tend to make me, like, try and forget about the body. And so I found this so interesting that everything for me lately has been pointing towards the body. And even something I heard Leonard Jacobson say, he's doing like a Monday a live YouTube every Monday evening. And the one I listened to this week, that's something I have no idea if this is true or not, but I just thought, wow, that's interesting. I never heard anyone say this before. But he said, because his whole teaching is, he says, when you're in the present moment, you are not in your mind. Like, all stop, when you're truly present, there is never a thought in your mind. And he says, when you are off in the mind, which means you're not present, he said, your body actually feels abandoned. I thought that was interesting, and I, like I said, I have no idea if that's true, but it made me really even, I guess it motivated me even more to really be present with the body. And it also reminded me this morning about, I think I've heard you mention before, A Course of Love.
Which, yes.
I've read a couple of times, and what I love so much about that particular book is that he doesn't, in that teaching, he doesn't, like, try and negate the body, which it almost feels to me like that's what, and I don't know if that's really the intention, but that's kind of what it feels to me in A Course in Miracles, and I know it is all about changing the mind, but there's nothing about, like, body consciousness and being, you know, present in the body, as, you know, it talks about in A Course of Love and the integration that needs to take place between, like, the personal self and the impersonal self. And I'm actually reading, I'm reading a couple things simultaneously, but the one of the books I'm reading right now, which I'm finding absolutely fascinating, and this was another one, which is suddenly I just like led to this. It's called The Mind of the Cells. And it's about, I don't know if you've ever heard of Satprem or Mother or Sri Aurobindo and the work that, that they were doing.
No.
Okay. This is something that was introduced to me years ago, and it was started, I want to say, in the 50s by Sri Aurobindo, where he claimed that, well, he started experimenting with actually diving deep down into the body until he got into the consciousness of the cells of the body. And he had a partner at the time that she's just always referred to as Mother. And then the guy's books that I've been reading, the one I'm reading now, is Satprem, and he became like her confidant. And so I don't know that much. I did read a book about Sri Aurobindo years ago, and I just remember being fascinated by it. But now the book I'm reading, The Mind of the Cells, is about the work that Mother did. Her, it's like he, actually I think he published like 13 volumes of all of her logs of her experimentation with this, but there's a lot of it in this book. And it's absolutely fascinating. Absolutely fascinating, where she goes through like all the different layers of mind, like the intellectual mind, and then the emotional mind, and then the mind of the senses, and then until she gets down into the physical mind that's within the cells of our bodies. And basically what this is all about, what they're looking for, is a new way for us to be able to live and be on the earth. They're looking for the next evolutionary leap, similar to like kind of leap that happened when like fish suddenly, you know, the water was drying up and they couldn't have the water to breathe anymore, so they had to find a new way to breathe on land, and so they, you know, amphibians.
So the next. Let me just interrupt, because what my brain is doing with this is saying the next evolutionary leap is really far away from where most of us are these days, where we get triggered to upset because the car won't start or our neighbor's playing their music too loudly or we think our friend is too loud when she eats with her mouth open or whatever. And so I'm thinking more in terms of what we do here is about the practical tools that we can use. And based on what you were just saying about the body, it put me in mind of something I was listening to this morning through the Tell Me Something True podcast with Laura McGowan. And she was, it's in her number 10 podcast with Jim Zartman. And he talks about four types of relational energy. And even in that podcast, I would say probably for this purposes of this audience or this type of discussion, I'd say skip the first 24 minutes of that podcast. And then you get into the practical stuff, right, where he's talking about the energy that we take into relationships. We take an energy that is for something, trying to fix something, an energy that is at something, trying to attack something, or an energy of avoidance. And then it came to him one day when he was teaching about those are the kinds of energies they talk about in the Enneagram that has these nine different personalities in a personality structure. And it came to him one day when he was presenting on it to talk about energy with, where you're in the moment with the person, connected with them, and headed in the same direction. So the image is when you have for or at energy, you are like face to face and one of you is trying to change the other or be very focused on getting something accomplished. And then when you've got avoidance energy, it's like the two people standing back to back moving away from each other. And the with energy would be represented in that imagery with two people standing side by side, maybe holding hands, faced in the same direction. But the thing that made me think about that when you were talking is that he was talking about how with the Enneagram, so much of it is being aware of the energy that you experience in the physical body. And getting the input from that, getting educated, kind of reconditioned, because so many of us in our cultural conditioning have been taught to ignore the fact that you've got a headache, sit up in class and just take notes and pass the test and, you know, hold your bladder until it's time for recess and then you go to the bathroom. Ignore those signals from the body, whereas the Enneagram and this set of approaches is saying, look, this is all good information. Instead of ignoring it, let's learn to use it as feedback, as a part of our decision-making process. And then, of course, if you're talking about Dr. Rice's work, it's if I have anything that's less than that loving, compassionate, gratitude, expressive energy, I can use it best as an alarm system to tell me that my interpretation of life is off the mark, that my focus is too narrow and myopic, that the interpretation I've chosen for what it means that this or that is happening in my life is not conducive to seeing the whole picture and not conducive to growth and connection and cooperation and collaboration. It's going to be about competition or avoidance or, you know, proving I'm right at the expense of others being wrong. And if I can just start to use more of the energies that are available to me as I inhabit the body, as information about what's going on inside me, right or wrong, on target or off target, I can accelerate my growth and progress. I can improve my relationships. I can learn sooner and sooner when it's important for me to step into the use of a tool rather than, you know, letting my conscious logical mind try to dictate what I should do or trying to solve the problem before I've actually resolved it. I mean, before I've actually identified what are the factors contributing to it. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is great, great intelligence within the body, but most of us use the body as a means to an end of all kinds of things, right? We don't actually just spend time with the body getting in touch with what's there. And the whole practice of, like, being present, like, putting your attention on the body is, to me, I think it's the easiest way to be present and to stay present, you know, just following your breath or whatever. I used to do a form of meditation that was based on movement, and you just always put your attention on the part that was moving. And in order to, because if you're in the present, you're not in the mind. So, and the only way that things can really go wrong, you get disconnected from the truth of who you are, is when you're in the mind. So this whole practice of noticing and, you know, putting your attention on what we're here with, like, every day, no matter where we go, like, we're with the body, right? So, yes, we are not a body, but we're with a body. And we can use that body not as a means to an end, but as a means in itself, I think, to become more aware, to expand our consciousness, and to stay connected to the truth of who we are. I mean, that's another thing, like, I love that Leonard Jacobson says all the time. He says, the truth, God, whatever you want to call it, love, is only in the present. Like, So if you realize that I'm just living my life out in my mind, well, but yet, you know, I'm seeking God, well, that's not going to work, you know? And so it's such a simple thing, but it's, you know, I think the challenge for me and probably a lot of people is to remain in the present. So, but I think the more you practice that.
And I think that it's important to recognize that we were conditioned out of it, right? That
right.
When we were children, we were very aware of the energies that are the physical, that are, as we say, of the body. And we were conditioned out of it. And if you take somebody like G.P. Walsh and his inner reconciliation work, if you watch him work with people, he asks them, so what are you feeling? Where are you feeling it? And he's gone so far as to rename or to give special names to the energies associated with the different chakras so that they seem more palatable for people, understandable to people. So, you know, I've got the nymph and I've got the defender, and he's got these various names, but the idea is to just tune in and feel where is the energy and what does that energy feel like. So he's not asking people, so what do you think about that and what's your thought about that and what do you think you should do about that? He's simply in his inquire, invite, and integrate three-step process. It's this cycle of being with the energies and letting them teach you. And it's much more about just what you're talking about, getting undoing the conditioning that has me ignoring the physical and training myself to tap into the awareness of these energies and use them as input. And then eventually my guidance evolves from that. And my guidance is far more on target when it includes all these various energies that we've been conditioned to ignore or to think they're, you know, irrelevant.
Right. And I remember the very first time I read somewhere that God exists within every cell of your body, that was new to me, and I just thought, whoa, and I just closed the book, and I went there thinking, wow, really? And the next thing I knew, I had that experience that's described as the peace that passeth all understanding, and it lasted about 24 hours. There was not a thing that could disturb me in any way. There was this core, like this rock. I felt like this rock inside of me that was just like, I was like, nothing could pull me from this rock of certainty and safety and surety. I mean, it was the most wonderful thing. And I had forgotten completely all about that. And all of a sudden, like I said, everything's been pointing the body, like, don't forget about the body, you know? And so I just think it's so important that, yes, we are not a body. And so I just wanted to bring that up, too, because with the Course in Miracles, because I know when I first started studying that, I was like, oh, you know, I need to forget about the body. That's what I thought one of the messages was. And but then when I read A Course of Love, I was like, well, that's not what this is saying at all. And I was kind of relieved. And so, yeah, I don't know
what
your take is.
Notice what you read into it when you listen to the Course in Miracles say, you're not a body.
Right? Yeah.
That's just a simple
right.
statement. And so one person mm-hmm. could hear that and say, this is trying to wake me up to the fact that I'm much more than just the body. And somebody else might hear that and say, this book is trying to tell me that my body is irrelevant or garbage or doesn't exist at all. And somebody else might read it and pick something in between. So, you know, notice in all of these teachings, this is one of the things we used to talk about regularly in the Mind Shifter support group, especially if we got somebody in new and we're going to be listening to one of Dr. Michael Rice's, an hour of one of his videos. We'd say, look, let's pay attention. There are 6 or 8 or 15 of us in the room. We're going to be putting something on the screen. And as we get together after this hour presentation and we discuss it around the table, just notice how many different impressions, interpretations, and reactions we get when we think we were all looking at the same thing. Right? But the truth is, I don't get to see the world outside of me. I get to see the pictures and interpretations and responses that my conscious mind generates. So I'm literally not watching the same thing on the screen that everybody else is watching. And so, you know, when you get that and you say, well, this is what the Course in Miracles says, understand that I might read the words verbatim as they are, and yet I might give them a meaning that is radically different than, you know, every other person or most of the other people who read that book.
Yeah,
so
and
take
I can
from
see.
It, yeah, take from it what works for you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I can see how I would interpret it as, don't pay attention to the body. Because, you know, I had so many experiences as a child where touch, when my body was touched, it was a very painful thing. So to be in the body as a child was very painful for me. And so I could see how, because of that conditioning, that I would say, I can just forget about the body. That's what this is teaching. but yeah, you're right. It was just my interpretation. That's probably why everything now is telling me don't forget about the body, you know, because there's great intelligence. I mean, and this morning I was just kind of seeing I think it's in the impersonal life he describes each of us as like a cell in his body, and that the different countries in the world each country might represent like a different organ, like in the body of God. And I was just seeing like these kind of like nesting dolls, but just with globes, you know, like with the earth, you know, the planetary body of God, and where each of us, you know, are an inherent part of that, and then, you know, going out from there, to the solar body of God, and then to the galactic body of God, you know, where each solar system would be like an organ, and on out to the universal, and just seeing how it's all one. It's just like, how far out are you aware? Are you aware of just the planet? You know, are you aware of the solar system, the galaxy, the whole universe, and just seeing how this expansion, and it goes, you know, all directions. It's not just, trying to get to some high state of bliss. It's also going down as deeply as you go, you know, it's in all directions. So, To sit in meditation and transcend the body and the whole physical plane, that to me, you know, isn't really the answer, because we're here. So we need to also go deep.
Well, it's when you say we need to, I would just, you know, watch your words. No, we don't need to, and you have the freedom to not go. And what you choose, or you have the liberty to not go there, and then what you choose is part of what creates your experience. And that's what we're trying to help people understand here. What we choose is, and what we choose to focus our awareness upon, becomes that which creates our experience of life. So we don't need to go deep, and we can stay shallow, and we can choose anywhere in between. And as we do, that's what creates our experience of life. It isn't that life is bad or wrong or good, or it's just life is life. And when we jump into the interpretation of it, then we're doing that thing they called, you know, eating from the tree of good and evil, right? Then we're moving into the level of judgment. And when we do that, we create a different kind of an experience than when we stay in allowance and acceptance and surrender, which are the, you know, three of the five keys to the kingdom that are listed in the Way of Mastery. You know, you want to get to where you say you want to be. If you want to have a more loving, expansive experience of life, get on God's team. How do you do that? You learn to identify this energy of desire, this really powerful but ultimately subtle energy that flows through you all the time. It's basically the stuff you've been trained to ignore. It's not about obsession or craving. It's not about passion. It's this very subtle energy of creation. And if you don't like the word desire, use this phrase: the energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through you in this moment. And when you learn to tap into that, now you're on the Creator's team. The next thing is, after desire, you move into intention. What's intention? Intention is my ability that I have to work with to keep my intention focused on being in alignment with that energy of desire throughout the day. And the more I do that, the more I feel these energies and these urges and impulses about how the creative energy wants to express uniquely through me in the moment, then I need to step into allowance. What's allowance? Allowance is my willingness to catch the early warning signs of my resistance. I either want to push away this experience of life and the creative flow, or I want to grab onto this. And I want to, when I catch that resistance, I want to release it. And that's how I move more and more into allowance. And then the next step, the next key is surrender. What is that? I need to surrender my need to be right. I need to surrender to be taught. I need to ask on a regular basis to be taught, what's mine to do here? How can I be a blessing to myself and others? How can I learn about life in this moment? So I have the energy of desire flowing through me that I learn to tune into. I keep my intention focused on being aligned with that, because that aligns me with what creation wants to express through me in the moment, day to day. Then I step into allowance, which is that vigilance for the tension or the resistance, and I drop the resistance as soon as I can, which puts me back in that allowance and acceptance. Then I surrender to be taught. I ask to be taught, how can life teach me more about itself in this moment? And then it says, the more I do that, the better my life is going to get. My life is going to get so much better, I'm going to be sorely tempted to think, oh, what a good boy am I. Look at what I'm manifesting. Look what I've called into my life. Look how powerful I am. I'm going to keep a little bit of this credit for myself. And because that's a trap, the fifth key to the kingdom is humility. To understand, I don't know who created me. I don't know when I was created. I am not the ultimate energy of creation. I didn't originate the energy of creation. I've been given dominion over a little nozzle of it that we might call my mind energy. And whatever I focus that on is going to bring more of that into my life. But I am not the originator of that mind energy. I didn't create the universe itself. And I don't have, with this perceptual system that's so focused on the five senses, I don't have access to even the tiniest fraction of 1% of what's going on in any given moment. So it's unweaning arrogance to think, I know what should be happening. Mm-hmm. So when I step into that humility and I see that I'm just the same as anybody else, and in that ancient Aramaic sense, I look for the highest and best in everyone and everything around me, and then I choose to cooperate only with that, that keeps the whole system open and flowing. And what evolves from that is beyond my comprehension with my conscious logical mind, and there aren't any words for it.
So that's from the Way of Mastery?
Yeah, that's lesson 5 from the Way of Mastery with a little Dr. Tim spin on it.
Yeah. I love that. That's a very succinct teaching. And I know in personal life, God describes he says that his will on this plane is what we call desire. And it's, like you said, it's not the desire of, like, I have craving something.
Yeah.
It's that
Exactly. In the Way of Mastery, they spend the lesson before that on just that. What is this desire thing? And it's almost identical to what you'll find in The Impersonal Life by Joseph S. Benner, where the divine is talking about that energy. It's mm-hmm. not about obsession or craving or passion or possession. It's not about preference. It's just this energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through you in each new present moment. And it's there. It's a real thing. And if you learn to tune into it, it's amazing. You know, how if you learn to tune into it and then you're willing to go with that flow. Because, you know, the lessons, the exercises they give in the fourth lesson of the Way of Mastery are about tuning into it and understanding in each of those exercises that you don't need to act on any of these as you become aware of a desire to do this or that. It's awareness of the creative flow. And as soon as you feel like, oh, but I have to go do this, well, that's probably misguided, right? There is that now I have to. Whereas if you are aligned and attuned to that energy, it's so subtle. It's very powerful, but it's so subtle that when you're aligned with it, you're not thinking about I have to this or that. You just act.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth of life is acting on you. And you're open in response, you know, open through that loving filter of Rachma, where you see actually everything as it is rather than through the filters of fear and hostility. And your action as a response is in immediate concert and in the flow of the creative force that's in, through, as, and around you in that moment. So you don't have to ask. It's like these people that are, you know, at an accident scene and they just act. And afterwards, people are saying, well, geez, how did you do that? Or how did you know? And they say, I don't know. It was in the mm-hmm. flow.
Yeah.
So
like,
that's something that if we learn to dismantle the conditioning we have that says we've got to figure it out and be right and use the conscious logical mind for all of that, that can happen all day, every day, being in that flow state.
Yeah. I think about...
So we're down to our last minute. So let me ask you to hold that thought, and thank you so much for your comments, questions, and suggestion for Dr. Ross, and I'll let you know when that interview gets scheduled. And I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Great discussion. And I think I got most of the books and the chapters and things. So thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Have a great show.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Tuesday, August the 31st, 2021. It's hard to believe that the month is over. Our dial-in number, 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Delighted and honored that we get to continue this conversation. And I'm going to just jump right into page 105 of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? I'm going to cover a couple of chapters before we open the phone lines and move forward into the process part of the show. So we're talking to the character Richard about the topic that the body has a mind of its own. And the basic bottom line of this chapter is that information stored in our structure, when resonated, makes its appearance as thinking. But in fact, it's just information resonating in the mind. Thinking implies a conscious actor. If I say, don't think about the color of your car, the movement in your storage system, your body's mind, is simply a response through resonance to that particular frequency. Nothing to do with thinking. It's not until we activate the true human mind, which is connected to the truth of who we are as love, human life really starts to show up. So we've been having that conversation with Richard, and he's starting to see the roots of violence within his own life and within the culture. So we finished the last session with a key thought from page 105 in this chapter. The mind is only capable of responding with whatever has been programmed into it. We can dismantle the realities that do not serve us by learning to forgive. Richard looked shocked. This explains a lot of the violence and crime in our world. There's a saying that goes something like, it takes a whole community to raise a child. It sounds to me like every interaction with the whole community has an influence in building each child's realities. That is an awesome responsibility. And I replied, Richard, yes, it is. The power that an individual or the media has in the way it presents and models behavior can make a difference between between shifting an internal reality from fantasy, a non-behavior driving reality, to one that gets acted out by a person, a behavior driving reality. I believe that media, news, and public personalities have a tremendous influence and a great deal of responsibility for what is happening, especially in our young people. And you look today at the quantity of viciousness and violence in the political dialogue and the increase in violence throughout our world, and you start to say to yourself, maybe it makes a difference, the moral character, the vocabulary, the language, and the perceptual constructs of the people who stand out as authorities in our world, to how our children come up watching those authorities. You know, it's kind of hard to miss the whole media characterization of political figures and business figures. And time for us to wake up to how our bodies' minds have been structured, and if structured out of hostility or fear, that it's important to begin to dismantle those hostility and fear-based perceptual constructs if one is ever going to be a truly contributing member of the civilization, of the society. And so our objective with this work is to invite people to look at quality of the content of their body's mind. And is it a quality of content when it ends up becoming a perceptual construct in a mind that really supports generating and creating, nurturing, caring, long-lasting relationships. A nurturing, caring society that can sustain itself in sanity and function. And so looking at the fact that a mind connected to active present love is a mind that truly can express human life, and one that's disconnected from conscious active present love, one that's linked to, that's buried in, mired in words and behaviors based in hostility or fear, tends to lead to the destruction of our human civilization, the destruction of the family, the destruction of relationships. You look at the fact that, you know, we're at a, what, a over 50% divorce rate in our culture. What's happened? I offer that the degradation of language is one of the keys, and restoring ourselves to that connection to love becomes part of the solution individually and collectively. And so that's our reading for today. And Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
It is all quiet. No questions, no hands. So press one.
So if you're out there in listener land, we would love to have a conversation with you. What directions can our show go today that would serve you? I thought yesterday's conversation was really quite awesome. Thank you, Michelle, for your willingness to participate and open the space for that conversation. I think the opening was profoundly powerful. And I would love somebody who's out there listening to put a hand up and lead us in a direction that will open another powerful conversation around the use of the tools. Oh, awesome. Let's say hello.
I believe it's Miss Magda, 828. You're on the air.
Hello, hello. It is Magda.
Nice to hear your voice. How are you?
Thank you. Wonderful. And you guys are wonderful as well.
We're rocking, yes.
Good, good. So I think this is going to be a very short conversation. I just wanted to double check with you on my thinking about something. I think I've got it, you know, the way it should be, but who knows, there might be room for improvement. So it's a simple understanding that I have now that all of my actions, all of my behavior is the result of my beliefs. That if I believe something is good for me and I deserve to have things that are good for me, I will do that. If I believe something is good for me, but I don't really deserve to be happy or have something good for me, that I will then not do it, even though I think I want to. Does that make sense?
Makes sense.
Okay. Okay. That's all. I just wanted a confirmation that I'm on the right track here. It seems so very basic to me.
Tell me more about your whole thinking process around this. I didn't really quite get the question.
Oh, okay. So I have noticed after all these long, long years of being on the planet that I very often make goals for myself because I know that they would either create joy in my life or health in my life or peace. And so they're wonderful goals, and I really do want to accomplish them. But over and over, I find that there are some of those goals that I find ways to procrastinate or even forget about them. And so it's been a quandary when I've been doing worksheets, like, why? You know, this is hopeless. Why is this happening? Why do I keep doing the same thing? who is it that you quote, I think from the Bible, that why is it I don't do the things?
The things I would do, I cannot do? That's Paul.
That's
yeah. Why is it the things I would do, I cannot do, and the things that I hate, I do?
That's it. Yep, that's it. And so I finally had this realization that, oh, my goodness, there's a reason why I am not. There's some sort of belief. And then I just put the question out, what is that that I believe? And it came down to, there's something wrong with me, and therefore I really don't deserve happiness or health or peace. There's something wrong. It's that whole deserving thing again. And then the next question was, well, what is wrong with me? And this one is really circular. What's wrong with me is that I'm not perfect, and therefore I don't deserve. Now it's even more circular. I don't have my notes here. I am not a perfect product of Source, and therefore I'm not perfect. And because I'm not perfect, I don't deserve all these good things. So it just goes around in circles, a lot of circles.
And,
oh, my God. Yeah.
And those conclusions you reach because you find yourself procrastinating on things you think are good for you?
The conclusions about not being perfect, is that what you're asking?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
No. I think that my belief that I'm not perfect has been hanging around with me for a long time. And it's something that my child mind somehow inferred or learned from probably the Catholic religion more than anything else. And then accelerated by my family, with fault finding and such, having faults found in me. So, but yeah, that thing about being perfect, it's this whole thing about original sin and this sin and that sin. And yeah, so that's old, and I've just carried it with me, and it's been operating to a large extent with the things that, again, I choose to do for myself. I want to do for myself, and yet somehow I don't. So why would that be?
Well, can I read that?
Oh, go ahead, Jeannie.
I just looked up that scripture so I could put it in the notes, and actually the verses that follow it are pretty cool and sort of answer that. This is the NIV version that says, I don't understand what I do. For what I want to do, I do not do. And what I hate, I do. And if I do what I do not want to do, I agree that the law is good. As it is no longer I myself who do it, but it's the sin living in me. And remember, sin is energies that are off the mark. So it is the beliefs and the thoughts that are off the mark that are living within you that's keeping you from doing what you want to do.
Got it. Oh, thank you for adding that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a fuller picture. So it's a sin. It's like the devil made me do it. That sort of excuse.
Right.
Yeah.
Except,
being off
you know, if you look at the word sin to the energy that's off the mark that we carry in us, which is the beliefs of I'm not good enough, or I can't do it, or I don't deserve it, or whatever.
And isn't in Aramaic Satan, or what we call the devil, really the resistor? Am I remembering that correctly?
In Aramaic, it's the resistor, one who misleads.
There you go.
You look at the average person, let's say when they're asked to be responsible for what's going on in their lives, the first thing most people do is go into resistance. And then their mind serves up a whole story about how it's my fault or their fault, or, you know, a whole mislead rather than correction. And when we move toward correction, then something different happens. And there's why the tools come in, for the removal of those energies that are off the mark. But let me throw in a different piece about about procrastination. I was just recently listening to a psychologist who was doing research on original thinkers. And you may find that if you befriend your procrastination just a little bit more, it's one of the characteristics of original thinkers. And it really gives them, according to this psychologist, I'll see if I can find the link and send it to you, it gives them the opportunity to do some creative thinking where other people rush in and got to get it all done. He's saying the procrastinator actually gets to do some original thinking around things and recreate their lives or make a more profound impact in the world because of their procrastination, as long as the procrastination doesn't become extreme.
Right. And I have experienced that where I've been actually happy that I procrastinated. The first example of this that I can remember was in college, and we had been given a schedule with our the timelines of our class and the due date of a certain paper. And I really put it off quite a long time until what interestingly happened is that I got to class one day and I was really, really worried because the deadline was coming and I hadn't even begun. I was just letting it float around in my mind, right? And there were other people in the class who said, oh, yeah, I'm finished with that. I'm ready to hand it in. And the teacher came in, professor, whatever it was, and said, well, I've changed that. I want you to do this and this instead of that topic. I was like, really? Well, that's neat. And all these other people had done so much work, and it wasn't useful for them in the end in terms of this class. And I've seen that happen over time where my procrastination has been just right. However, I'm not experiencing this the same way, Michael. What I'm talking about is not really sitting in with having more time to think about it. Because when I think about it, I ruminate about, oh, how horrible. I don't know how to start. It's too much. I'm overwhelmed. What other thoughts come to mind? I really should. A lot of shoulding. And so therefore, a lot of guilt and anxiety. And when I actually do what it is that I've been avoiding, it's not a big deal. It's like, wow, I used all that energy resisting this, and it's fine. Turned out well. It was easier than I thought. So I think those are two different categories for me of procrastination.
Well, and maybe that procrastination gave you the time to come up with the original ideas that otherwise wouldn't have been there. Would make the task a struggle and a difficulty. One of the examples he uses in this particular presentation is he talks about Martin Luther King.
Uh-huh.
And in Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, he points out that King was still sitting in the audience waiting to present and writing his speech. And scratching lines out and replacing them as he's listening to others present and he's getting ready to get up there. And the words, "I have a dream," were not in the speech even.
Uh-huh.
They came spontaneously on the platform as he's presenting, because his speech wasn't something he got up and presented. It's something he did as an original creation on the spot. So maybe when you get to that thing that you fretted and frowned over, having perhaps healed some of your fretting and frowning, there was an open channel for original creativity. And of course, after you already, once you had that, it's like, oh, that was easy. So maybe that you might want to look at that and see if that's part of your method of being original and creating and become a little more accepting and approving of yourself in it.
Yeah. I will look at that. I will notice on purpose. What I'm concerned about, though, is how much anxiety, emotional anxiety, I'm causing myself when I do that procrastination. And I think circulating back to what you just said about perhaps I would have more acceptance. Well, maybe that's what would happen if I had more acceptance and I would not create that anxiety. On the other hand, perhaps the anxiety is part of the creative thinking process for me.
Well, how about a mind shifter?
Yeah.
How about a mind shifter?
Let me go to where I can write. Hold on. I have to unplug. I'm in the charger right now. Okay. Oh, yes, mind shifter. One of my favorite tools. Okay. Ready for it.
It's safe, healing, and natural. For me to lovingly, with confidence.
To lovingly,
with confidence.
Confidence.
Embrace and heal all anxiety.
Embrace and heal all
anxiety as I create an awesome original life.
Awesome. Well, that's interesting. I'm having a hard time writing the word awesome. There, that's
first worksheet.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, that one stirred something.
Because remember that you're not your anxiety and you're not your fear and you're not your sadness, you're not your grief, you're not probably hardly anything you've ever been told you are.
Yeah.
You are a being of light and of love.
Okay.
And when you give yourself to time and the space to embrace those other things that you've been told and work through them, yeah, you're probably not getting the task at hand done. So it looks like procrastination, but you're cleaning the junk out of the way. And that's perhaps a more important task.
Say more about cleaning the junk out of the way.
Well, the anxieties that arises, the whatever kinds of things are the inhibitors that come up in your mind, the self-disapproval, the acceptance of self as something less than love, as you work through and clean that up. You know, most people never think of it. They wake up in the morning, they start their run, they fill their bellies, they drink their caffeine, they take their drugs, they smoke their cigarette, they run off to work, they do their job, they run home from work, they, have their fifth of scotch and fall into bed. Mm-hmm. And as I observe you, you're living a life of conscious awareness, doing your work, cleaning up what doesn't work in your life, and always moving toward embracing something greater. I mean, to me, that's pretty profound when you look at the average person in your age range in America today.
I think that's pretty profound. That's good to have that mirror. Thank you so much.
I've watched you struggle over and work to deal with things that most people, when those things present in their lives, turn tail, run the other way, will do anything to not face them or deal with them.
That's true. Yeah, well, you know, I firmly believe, I guess I have since I was a little kiddo, definitely in my teenage years and beyond, that the reason I'm on this planet is to learn how to be loved. And I used to say I wanted to learn how to love and be loved, but later learned, no, I just need to learn how to be loved, to live in love. So, yeah, I guess that was my intention this time around.
Now, if we take a look at, you know, what passes for life in the world, that's probably one of the greatest childhood gifts that you got from your religion of origin.
Yeah.
In a world that, you know, I mean, think about, we have 25% of the world's prisoners in a country that has 5% of the world's population.
Mm-hmm.
What are people doing to have to do that?
Mm-hmm.
We live in a world that, in the years you've been on the planet, we've killed about 150 to 175 million people in war. And this country's been responsible financially and militarily for a great deal of that. What have people been doing? And notice that you've been moving in a majorly different direction than the herd, and doing some self-introspection and dealing with things. And, you know, you're probably one of the early adopters. You probably didn't watch your parents or your uncles or your aunts or the people around you or the neighbors around you doing that.
True.
You probably watched most of them doing what the culture's doing.
Yeah.
And so that's pretty profound.
So I'm spending a lot of my time and energy to undo what they taught me so I can move further into my own being, my own loveness. I just flipped the page here, and I see that at the end of the last worksheet I did on this issue of deserving, I just reread the goal. And the goal is, it's a goal and a statement. I offer you, my neighbor, myself, who is myself, my continued reminding that you do deserve to make and carry out healthy, happy, and peaceful choices every day, because you are on the list, the love list. That's why you're here. Because you are love, you are love itself, and you don't need any other reasons. So I've been reading that every day. It's my intention to read that for a month.
So let's just take a minute. Let's look at that thought, and let's take a minute and look at, let's say, the characters that appear on the nightly news. You know, the political leaders, the governors, the general people who show up there, how deeply do you suppose any one of them that you've seen show up there in the last year could sit down and have that kind of an original thought?
Not too many. It's true. Yeah.
So methinks perhaps it might be time, as you look at that thought that you just came up with, to apply it to yourself and be a little more gentle with yourself. And it might be a place to start to look at, you know, this might be a place to dig out the power person worksheet and do a power person worksheet around this issue and the way you're treating yourself as you hold that goal to treat others certainly a lot more gently. And maybe it's time to free yourself of that power, the propensity to move in the direction of the way your power person thought of you and treated you.
Right. I agree with that. I don't know if I made it clear when I read that goal that it was to me.
It wasn't to anybody.
Yeah, you got that. Yeah, but I think that's a really good idea, the power person, the critical person, critical persons. And as a child, I took that on to be truth. And so that's what I've been carrying around. So
it sounds like the goal that you set that you just read to us from that last worksheet is the mind shifter that has brought all this process up for you.
You know, I'm not sure if it was from a mind shifter. Could have been.
Well, no, I mean, you perhaps haven't written that as a mind shifter, but in fact, it sounds to me like a perfect mind shifter that would bring up everything, you know, especially when you're thinking of that about yourself, that would bring up everything unlike that, which, of course, is the purpose of a mind shifter.
Oh, yes. So am I hearing you say use this as a mind shifter?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
And it kind of sounds like it's sort of unconsciously been functioning as a mind shifter, and that's why you're processing this stuff about yourself and quote-unquote what's not right about you.
Right. What is wrong with me anyway? Yeah. What I really
So would you read that? Would you read that goal again?
Sure. Let me just say this before I lose it. While I still have it.
Mm-hmm.
What was it? What I did experience before I got to this part of the worksheet was that, oh man, I really want to get that back. When I got to, So I believe that I'm less than perfect, so that makes me imperfect, and because I'm not perfect, I don't deserve that circle. And I felt helpless and hopeless at that point. And I wrote, boy, I can't do anything about that but go around and around in those circular beliefs and stay stuck in the hole. So what can I do? Perhaps I can get a dispensation. This is kind of funny because dispensation is a Catholic term. I can get a dispensation, exception, an exclusionary clause that lets little Margaret, a.k.a. Magda, giving her special permission to be perfectly healthy, peaceful, and joyous, even though she is not perfect, even though she is just human. And and out of that, yes, drew this final offering, this goal. So should I read that now?
Please.
Okay. I offer you, my neighbor, which is me, my continual reminding that you do deserve to make and carry out healthy, happy, and peaceful choices every day because you are on the list. And the list is the one with the dispensation. And that is the loved list. This is why you're here, because you are loved. You are love itself. And you don't need any other reason to be deserving.
I'll breathe with you on that.
Yeah.
And that's a powerful thought that has put you into a circular process. That carbon-based memory, you know, we were just talking about from Why Is This Happening to Me Again, the body has a mind of its own. So here's the mind coming up with its circular reasoning. Well, but you can't have that because you're not perfect. Okay, so now what I know is I can have that because I'm not perfect.
Yeah, right.
It's okay for me to have that even though I'm not perfect.
Yep. Yeah,
Say again.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
So it sounds like you're right on track for the next layer of moving out the confusion of the mind, the body's mind.
Yeah.
And how many generations do you suppose that thinking has gone on?
Oh, my goodness. Yes. A couple.
Yeah.
A couple. This was a very powerful worksheet, and I know it's the culmination of many other mind shifters and worksheets that I've done to get to this point. So, that's why I'm reading it every day. I really want my brain to get that. Yeah.
Yeah, you deserve to experience yourself as love just because the Creator put the breath of life in you, and that's who you are. Whatever all the other stuff is, it's all the other stuff. The cultural, the family stuff, it's just stuff.
Right.
You got to stop believing that crap.
And this is truly, I've heard those words before, I've said those words before. This is truly, I believe, the first time that I really understand and embrace the meaning. You deserve love just because the Creator put the breath of life in you.
The Creator didn't put any of the conditions in the way that your parents did, or your sister, or your brother, or your next door neighbor, or your teacher, or your boyfriend, or your girlfriend, didn't put any of those conditions in the way. You are that just because you are that. And actually, we use this language we've been brainwashed with. I'm only human. Well, actually, if we're only functioning as humans, we'd be functioning as love. Period. It's that we have a non-human component that holds all that other garbage.
Right.
And that's the non-human component that needs to be removed. The messages that are insane in the context of recognizing that we are beings created out of the active presence of love. It's who we are. And we've been taught to forget. And blow it off and cover it up with everything.
I was just thinking of how much in my life I have interacted with adults and children when I was a teacher and a social worker. And what I have here in this goal for me to understand that I don't need to be perfect in order to be loved. I have said that in one way or another to multitudes of others. So all I have to do now is learn to apply it to myself, that I deserve as much as anyone else. Go ahead, Michael.
We teach back best that which we most need to learn, don't we?
Yeah. Yep, indeed. Oh, well, I'm feeling very, very full. and excited, Michael, about moving forward in acceptance, with acceptance. Yeah. Thank you. And thank you, Jeannie.
Well, we know the truth is that you're human, and therefore you are love. You are made of mercy, that all-embracing love is gracious and civil and functions out of that. That's who you are. And the rest of it, silly messages from the past.
Silly is a very good word. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
So I support you being able to just totally and completely embrace yourself in that and let go of all the conditions that the world has taught you.
And have some gratitude to the Catholic Church for some of the early things I learned, some of which were very, very fundamentally good and good for me. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of brain cells built, and it just takes some rewiring to correct the errant messages that came with some of those basic brain cells.
That's a good way to look at it. It's kind of like deleting the word in the sentence that really didn't belong.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Well,
nice work, young lady.
Thank you.
Thank you for giving that gift to all of us to get that, to review that.
Yeah, you're welcome. And thank you for not letting me off the hook. Because I was ready to hang up in, 2 minutes after we started. And
yeah, this is just going to be a short conversation.
Yeah, right. But you noticed that there was something deeper and the potential for a lot more going on. So your skills are so, so appreciated. Thank you again. Okay, I'm going to listen. I hope somebody else has benefit of, the worthiness to their own belief that they deserve to get your assistance right now and calls pushes number one.
All right. We appreciate you.
Bless you guys. Thank you.
All right. Delighted to be on your team and to have you on ours.
Indeed. I agree.
All right. Well, Miss Jeannie, any other thoughts for you? Anything happening in the chat room or in the phone queue?
It is all quiet. So if someone presses one, I know the other day there was some conversations going on and several people hit one just right, like 5 minutes at the end of the show, and we didn't have time to get to them. So if you are on the switchboard, press one. Let's get your question now while we've got time.
Yeah, it amazes me sometimes how it runs the clock down for the last 2 minutes, and it's like kind of self-sabotage, you know. Well, I know I could have pressed one earlier, but then I'd have got gotten into my process. And so I'll just pretend and leave it to the last minute. So if you're out there in listener land, our calling number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, is 563-999-3581. 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. And then if you push one, we'll be having a conversation. How can we support you? What's going on in your world? But not everybody pushed the button once. Let's, King Jeannie, that the other day, or maybe we covered that, there was somebody that had written a question in by email.
Yes, we did talk about that. They were wanting to know a better explanation for Rukka da Kutcha.
Oh, yeah. Okay, good. So we got that one covered. Cool. So the primary tool that we're offering here with this work, you've heard me speak about before probably, or if you're new, maybe you haven't, is the tool of actual first century Aramaic forgiveness. And I emphasize the word Aramaic because most of the world has bought into the Greek misinterpretation and misunderstanding of forgiveness. They've bought into the idea, well, you know, it's your fault that I'm in pain, and I'm going to forgive you for the fact that my physiology, my emotions are in pain. Which, of course, if I, quote unquote, forgive somebody else, if I let them off the hook for the fact that internally I'm generating pain, I've done nothing to impact, touch, or change my pain. And, you know, it's just like it's all pervasive. Everywhere you look in this Western world, oh, they'll say, well, it's to benefit you that you forgive them. I'm going to say never, ever, ever forgive anybody for anything. Because the act that the Greeks told us was the act of forgiving is the act of letting them off the hook for what's happening inside of me. And, you know, imagine I was able to set it up so that I stand in front of and have a procession of 7.5 billion people, everybody on the planet, go by me. And I shake their hand and I forgive them. Have I taken one iota of action that moves me inside myself to address or remove the cause of my pain? None whatsoever. Now, when I pretend that letting you off the hook for the pain that's inside of me is forgiveness, I can stop inflicting the pain on myself. And it seems like, well, see, that worked. I forgave you. But it wasn't very long. In fact, there's a book about this. It's called Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Before I find somebody else to blame for the fact that my pain generated by me is moving in me. But I'm so skillfully keeping it hidden from myself that when it comes up, I find somebody to associate it with in my mind, and I want to let them off the hook for it. The word forgive in Aramaic is a word that represents a tool with which you go inside yourself, locate the hidden root of your pain, the actual cause of your pain, and remove that pain. So that once you forgive, a whole procession of people could come by and do the thing that would put you, that seemed to be the cause of you being in pain again and again and again and again. A whole procession could show up, but you can't be in pain over it because the capacity to generate that pain is no longer in you. So it's never been anybody else's behavior, action, or words that has caused your pain. But what perhaps others' behavior, action, or words trigger in you with which you cause yourself pain. If that's a new idea for you, then I suggest you go to our website, whyagain.org, and in the upper left-hand corner of the page, there's a link. Click that link. It says Start Here. It'll walk you through all of the technology of first century Aramaic forgiveness. How you collapse perception, access the hidden parts of your mind, and literally remove them and thus free yourself from pain, whatever somebody else does. You can carry out the forgiveness process live on the website. Again, the website is whyagain.org. You can download the worksheet from the website, print it off on your printer, and do it right there at home. The worksheet is Magda was just talking about. Step by step, here's how it's done. You can also go to your phone's app store and type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, all one word, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. When you do that, you'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app, and it will show you step by step how to go through the process of forgiveness. There are links on the website that will help explain that, and of course, there may be questions that come up as you do that, and the purpose of this radio show is to support you in thoroughly and fully understanding the how, the why, and the skill of carrying out the process of forgiveness. It's not always Dr. Feelgood to do that. It means you're going to get to look at parts of your mind that you've probably hidden from yourself, parts of your life that you've dissociated from. You're going to learn to bring those dissociated parts of your mind forward to awareness. That's not always Dr. Feelgood. And so a major key in the process is to be willing. I'm willing to look at the parts of me that I, my culture, and my family system have denied and hidden from themselves forever. I'm willing. And in that willingness, in giving my mind permission to show me what I've previously denied myself access to, is a major key in the process. Because when you bring the hidden parts of your mind, the deleterious parts of your mind forward in the presence of active love, those parts of the mind being brought forward where love is active and present in you begin to dissolve. The forgiveness process from the first century Aramaic is how to do that. And as you engage the tools, because there are many pitfalls in the mind on that journey, we're here to support you stepping over those pitfalls or holding your hand as you step over those pitfalls and freeing yourself of the errors of generations and generations and generations. Here you go to that story, ancient story, of the Jews being lost in the desert for 40 years. Now you think about, here's a 35 square mile area, a group of people who are quite bright and know a lot about astronomy, who know the sun rises in the east and sets in the west, who know that if they get up in the morning and start following the direction of the rising sun is moving in, that they have to be out of this 35 square mile area pretty quickly. You realize that that whole story is not about being lost in a hot, sandy place, that the desert is a code word for being unconscious, for hiding parts of our minds from ourselves and not having access to those parts of our minds. And if you go back and you read that story and understand that it's about being unconscious about the content of your own mind, then you read where the resolution came from, and where the resolution came from was the old generation died off. You realize that the word generation comes from the root genari, which means cause, that the causes in the mind that had not been resolved had to be resolved. It wasn't about old people physically dying. It was about resolving those generational patterns based in self-deprecation, being destroyed by others, in hatred and fear and rage and guilt and grief and greed and condemnation and gossip and slander and vengeance. It was about addressing, squarely addressing, and that's not a Dr. Feelgood process, those parts of yourself, and removing them. Otherwise, when those parts were triggered into activity, they would come in and take over your mouth, and you'd be doing things that were self-destructive and destructive toward others, going against your own good. How many times in hostility or fear have you said things that afterwards you wish you'd put tape over your mouth and never said them? That's the unconscious coming into activity, being stimulated into activity and taking over your speech. And as long as there's an unconscious there, as long as there's that desert component, then at the most inopportune times, it's going to tend to come to the surface and create another one of those "why is this happening to me again" experiences. We're here to support you getting free of that. We're here to support each mind, heart, and being on the planet having access to the tool of forgiveness, to the skill and the ability to reach in beyond their own unconscious dynamics, address and remove, that is, forgive their own unconscious dynamics, thereby exiting the desert. And when we exit the desert, called that exiting the desert was entering the promised land. What is the promised land? I'd offer it's the state of conscious co-creation of our lives, that everything that we are conscious of, we create from that space of love through those things, and never does something pop out from the unconscious that interrupts that, because we've done the work of addressing and removing those parts of ourselves. So that's what we're here to do. We're appreciative of you lending your ears. And, of course, when we're complete, you can go to our website, again, whyagain.org. Hit the microphone and drill down, and you'll find today's show and the last 10 years of shows, thousands of them, that you can download, access free, and make use of. We're honored that you're part of the process. Create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.